Okay, folks, let's get settled in. Can you hear me? No? Okay, folks, let's get settled in. So find a seat. There's nothing reserved. Though it says reserved, I think that's from launch. And as the school is prone to do, they leave everything as is for the rest of eternity. So you can sit wherever you want. Now, here's something you're going to start to see at the beginning of every class. I'm going to start this class off with you. There's going to be a quiz at the start of each class. Don't freak out yet. It's not going to be graded. It's going to be about what we're going to do during the class. You think that's crazy? You do a quiz before the class? I do this for two reasons. One is to make sure you show up on time, because today's an exception. We start at 10:32. I'm going to start at 10:30, no matter what, because I've discovered that the later you start, the later you end up starting. So, and the quiz kind of gets you in there. The second is, I think you already know this stuff before we even actually do it, and I want you to prove that to yourself, because you're going to discover as you answer the quizzes that the rest of the class is confirming what you already knew, which should be no surprise, but it's actually good for your self-esteem or whatever you need to do to feel good about the class. So we're going to start with a quiz. Ready? This is a class about valuation. In fact, if you're in the wrong class, this is now the time to leave. Okay? This is not strategy. I was going to say something bad about strategy, but I've been told not to say anything bad about strategy. They're having a tough time getting people in anyway. Okay? It's valuation. So here's my first question. We're going to spend 26 sessions, 15 weeks talking about valuation. So I'd like you to pick a word that you would use to describe valuation. I'll give you the choices. It's a science. We'll come back and kind of explore this because later, as I said, this is going to be what we're going to talk about for the rest of the day. It's an art. It's magic. Or maybe it's something else. You can put in D something else. Either to reflect the fact that you can't think of anything right now, your mind's blanked out, or because you can't pay. Ready? Art, science. Everybody made a choice? Art, science, or magic? Okay. Second question. And this is, you're saying, this is not a real estate class. You're going to discover that valuation seeps into almost everything we do. Let's say you decide to buy a house. I don't know how you're able to afford it with your MBA tuition, but you know, whatever it is. You look at the apartment, the house, the realtor names a number, $1 million. Did the realtor value the house or price the house? For the moment, you might have absolutely no idea what those words actually mean. But pick one. Did she value the house? Did he? Actually, the first time I wrote it, I made the realtor a she and the equity research analyst a he, which suggests some hidden biases I have to overcome. So I went back and fixed it. So the realtor is going to be the he and the equity research analyst is going to be the she. So how did he come up with the number? Value or price? And then let's follow up. You're reading an equity research report. There's a buy or a sell recommendation, right? Buy the stock, sell the stock. Did the equity research analyst value the stock or price the stock? As I said, for the moment, you say, I don't know what the difference is. Value, price, aren't they the same thing? If that's what your priors are, as I said, this is about testing out your priors. Make a choice. We'll come back to this question of value versus price. What sets them apart? Third, I want you to characterize. So this is not about the class, this is about you. This is actually perhaps the most diverse valuation class I've taught in 29 years. We have law students here, we have engineering students, we have undergraduates, we have graduates. We might even have some history majors, I don't know. No? So I want you to look into yourself, and given what you're comfortable with, given your history, the job you used to have, where you want to go, would you classify yourself more as a story person or a numbers person? And there's no value judgment attached to it. And I'm using the word value here in a different context. So I'm not saying one is better than the other. Pick a grouping. Are you a story person or a numbers person? And then I have a question that's going to be difficult to answer because it's about the general population. If you're, whatever you picked, who do you think is going to have an easier time with the class? Is it going to be the story people or is it going to be the numbers people? As I said, no right answers, wrong answers. Make your choices. And the final question seems to have disappeared. No, that's okay. But the last question is about what your end game is. What do you hope to get out of this class? And I'll give you the choices. Maybe this class is all about getting a tool set that you can get a job where you have to do this. Maybe that's your end game. Maybe your end game is to understand how markets price stocks. Maybe your end game is just getting the 3 credits. Maybe your end game is this is an easy class. I have to balance off that really tough strategy class. Or maybe your end game is you really want to invest better. So I'm not saying one is better than the other. I want you to think about those because in a sense I'm going to lay out my themes for the class and along the way we're going to kind of deal with these. But these are going to be issues that come up again and again through the course of this class. Okay, so let's see how your answers play out. So as I said, there are three separate There are three different packets you should have got. If you didn't get them, don't freak out. You can download them after the class. As I said, the slides are going to be up there. So let's set the table. This is essentially what this class is about. And at the end of this next 30 minutes or so after I've gone through this, you can decide whether this is for you. You still have a chance to drop ad until next week, right? So I just want to make sure you know exactly what you're getting into. I don't want to do any false advertising here, right? So first, a little bit of the logistics to show you how much things have changed. If you look at your actual syllabus, the room number is wrong because I got a new room, a bigger room. This is what 29 years of seniority gets you, is bigger and bigger rooms, yeah? One of these days, I'll be moving into an entire floor by myself. And the only thing that creates is more room to put crap in. So I'm worried about how much crap I'm going to accumulate. But it's actually, it used to be 996, now it's 969. Confusing, right? I half the time go to the wrong room still. I have the key to my old room. Don't tell anybody this. I actually get it and say, oh my God, this isn't my room. It's too clean. Right. My email address is right up there. It's the easiest way to get in touch with me. My homepage is, just today we'll come back to it. My office hours are right before this class and right after this class. Okay? But I'm going to say something that's going to sound odd, but for those of you in my corporate finance class, you probably have heard this. How many people are in my corporate finance class? Okay, a lot of you. So by now you kind of sense the torture that's coming. Okay? It already started, right? 3 emails already before class even started. I kind of, usually I send only 2. I couldn't restrain myself. But I have like 121 lined up to go. So don't worry. Every day for the rest of the semester, you're going to get an email from me. That's another reason to drop the class. If you don't like to read emails. Okay? But in the corporate finance class, I described the fair game principle. Okay? Fair game principle is basically, if you find me, I'm fair game. Which means that the next 15 weeks, we're going to play a game, which is I try to make sure that you don't find me. No, that's actually not it. You can find me, and it's usually better to come in outside office hours if you have extensive questions, because if you come in during office hours, there are people lined up maybe, administrative questions. So if you have questions, you want to talk about, or if you don't, it's not even about the class. You want to talk about investing, valuation, life in general, Actually, let me take out the life in general. Investing and valuation, come by and you can chat. Nick is going to be the TA for the class. There's only one TA. It's a big class. But unfortunately, the problem I have in valuation is almost nobody, because it's only second years to take it, by the time I actually teach the class in the fall, there's nobody who's taken the class before. And this is an idiosyncratic class, which is if you've taken valuation from somebody else, it might not quite fit into this class. So Nick's the only person who's actually taken the class. So he's unique. So he's the TA. Okay. So let's lay out the themes for the class. Remember the question I asked you, is it an art, is it science, is it something else? Let's go back and review what makes the difference between art, science, and something else. What's the essence of a science? Any scientists there? What's the essence of a science? Physics, math, what's your science? Kind of a fuzzy science. but it is a science, I know. Okay. And what's the essence of a science? So now we're talking, you know, the core sciences, right? And so what's the essence of a science?
Reproducibility and understanding of
certain things. Okay, and there are some laws that cannot be violated. So in physics, for instance, the law of gravity is the law of gravity. Whether you're the CEO of a company or the mailroom attendant, you jump out of the 26th floor of J.P. Morgan, you're going to hit the ground at about the same time. You say, I'm the CEO, this doesn't apply to me. The laws of gravity are... So in science, not only can you reproduce, but there are these you can prove things. There are things that can... This is going to happen. Input, output. And I'd probably extend that into mathematics, engineering. I mean, these are sciences in the sense that there are rules you cannot violate, principles that you cannot get around. Valuation is not a science. It's not input-output. You can do everything right and be horribly wrong. Get used to it. And that's, I'm not saying that in kind of a throwaway. It's actually one of the toughest parts of dealing with valuation for somebody who comes in with a science background. You've got to be okay being wrong. And that's actually a psychological problem for most people because they're so used to checking their answer. I got it right. Now I can move on. QED, whatever that means. I've proved this. You cannot do that in valuation. Valuation is not a science. What's the essence of an art? Sculpture, painting. Have you seen a Picasso? Actually, we should be able to paint like that, right? Put noses in the wrong places, offer it to the Met, you know, look, I... The essence of an art is you either have it or you don't. I can teach you some aspects of the art, but great artists, you know, you are either born with it or not. And the reality is much of art cannot be taught. It's got to come from some mysterious place. Thank God. Valuation is not an art. Because then, if it is, I've spent 29 years of my life teaching something that cannot be taught. This is my 29th year at Stern. I came in 1986, September of 1986. The school was downtown. I came in September. I came in from UC Berkeley. I said, what have I gotten myself into? They gave me a class to teach. It was called Security Analysis. Those of you who've never heard of this class is a long and hoary tradition. It's a class that Ben Graham taught at Columbia to you know who? The Voldemort, you know, basically. Let's see if we can go 15 weeks without ever mentioning his name. I'll dance around it a dozen times. You know. So they said, teach this class. I took one look and said, I'm not teaching this class. It's the most boring collection of topics I've ever seen. Because... By 1986, the class was showing its age. Because here's what the class looked like. 3 weeks on valuing stocks, usually the dividend discount model, dancing around it multiple times. 3 weeks on valuing bonds, two on options and futures, one on, and then 5 weeks on institutional detail. You're saying, what the heck is that? You'd spend an entire session on listing requirements of the New York Stock Exchange. Teaching was really easy before Wikipedia came along, right? You could spend an entire 80 minutes talking about these are the 10 listing requirements. And everyone said, really? You are so knowledgeable. So So they give me this class. I said, I'm not teaching this class, which is not a great attitude if you've just been hired as an assistant professor. But I didn't know better. I went to the head of the department and I said, you know what? I'd like to teach evaluation class. He said, don't do it. There isn't enough stuff in valuation to teach a class. And you know what? In 1986, he was absolutely right. There wasn't enough stuff in valuation to teach a class. But I was stubborn. I'm still stubborn. I wanted to do it anyway. And I discovered very early in my academic life that the best way to get things done in academia is to do them subversively. Because if you go through the official channels, you know how it works, right? Committees reporting to subcommittees that report to other committees, and by the time it gets turned around and comes back down, I'd have retired. So here's what I said. I said, I'll teach the security analysis class. Then I went in and taught evaluation class. They have no idea what I do in the classroom. Remember, these were the days before webcasts. I could be talking about God only knows what in the classroom. You know how many years it took them to catch on? 2008. 22 years after I've started doing this, I get a call from the dean's office. He said, we hear you're teaching evaluation class. I said, yeah, I've been doing it for 22 years. We should call it valuation. I said, good. Finally, we have a name. So if you look at the history of class offerings at Stern, you won't see valuation before 2008 because I used to take every conceivable class that was given to me and make it a valuation class. Say, so equity instruments and markets, no problem, I'll teach that. Valuation. So for 29 years, I'd have been teaching something that cannot be taught if it's not. It's not a science. It's not an art. It's not magic. It looks like magic sometimes, but it's not magic. If you ask me to describe valuation, and you're going to see me return to this concept again and again, I would describe it as a craft. I'll give you the analogy that's closest to valuation. Cooking. How do you learn cooking? You could read cookbooks. You could watch cooking shows. You could watch that guy on the Food Channel go around restaurants eating every conceivable thing that doesn't move. But to actually learn cooking, you know what you have to do? You have to go into the kitchen. Remember that room in your apartment that you never go into? Except to raid the fridge once in a while or put your Chinese food in there? You got to go into the kitchen. You got to turn the stove on. That's a big. Now, if you don't do that, then nothing happens. Then you've got to put a skillet on there, and you've got to start cooking. And guess what? The first time you do it, you are going to screw up. Even scrambled eggs don't look like scrambled eggs the first time you do it. I remember the first time I have to cook once every week. This is like an obligation that I've entered into. I don't know how this happened. It's part of my marriage contract, I think. It was one of those hidden clauses. So Sunday is my day. And it's an elaborate procedure. I have to pull up a recipe. I have to follow it to the T. That's the other thing, is when you're uncertain, you follow things to the T. And I remember the first time this was a recipe. It said, beat the egg till the whites stand up. What the heck does that mean? You look at an egg, you say, first, it's this yellow thing in the middle surrounded by this translucent mess around it. That's supposed to stand up. I took like 20 minutes beating the egg. Nothing stood up. And my wife comes out and says, let me show you how it's done. She whisked it for 3 minutes and something stands up. I said, oh my God, this is amazing. You learn cooking by cooking. You learn valuation by doing valuation. Not listening to me talk about valuation, not watching me do valuation, by doing valuation. So you know what's coming, right? For the next 15 weeks, what I want you to do is value company after company, and I'm going to kind of give you some structure to it. Every week for the next 15 weeks, I'm going to put up a valuation of the week. Starting this week. You see, what company are you going to value? Whatever I'm interested in. It's all about me anyway. So this week I'm going to put up my valuation of Uber. It's a little dated, but it actually is going to be very closely connected to the next theme, or the second to last theme on what I'm going to talk about. In December of 2014, I'm going to put up my valuation. I'm going to give you the story behind my valuation. I'm going to put up the spreadsheet. I'm going to create a Google Shared spreadsheet. And you know what I want you to do? I want you to take that spreadsheet and do your own valuation of Uber. You're saying, but you've already done it. That's my valuation. Don't steal mine. You can do your own. And the first time you sit down to value a company, the first week, especially if you haven't done valuation before, you're going to want to stay as close to my numbers as you can, because he's putting the numbers already. I'll change the third decimal point. That's okay. Small steps are better than no steps at all. So your value might be only 2 cents off from mine, but you've just come up with your valuation of Uber. And what I hope to do over the next 6, 7, 8 weeks as we go through is get you comfortable enough to disagree with me. Because when you say you are wrong, I know I've done my job, because that's where I want you to be, is to say, I don't like your valuation. But rather than bitch and moan about not liking my valuation, what I'd like you to do is make it your own. So for the next 15 weeks, I'm going to put up companies. I'm going to range the spectrum. I might go to Lukoil in a couple of weeks, and I might pick up Airbnb the week after, Flipkart the week after. I'm going to try to get as different as I can each week, so you get a different experience, because each time you value a company, you will learn something about this process. I don't remember how many companies I valued, but every time I value a company, I still learn something new. And in this class, I've always stayed just one class ahead of you. Sometimes I fall one class behind. That's not a good place to be. But that's essentially how we're going to you're going to learn valuations, by doing it over and over, making mistakes and learning from your mistakes. Here's the second thing. I know we'll be entangling ourselves in models and tools and techniques as we go along. But one of the things I hope that comes through in this class is, if you take away all that complexity, at its core, valuation is simple. That's the other thing I want you to be able to tell me in 15 weeks, is, hey, this class was easy. We wasted our time. It's just one equation. You've been moving around it. And if you come to that recognition, you're going to see valuation is simple. We're going to talk about different ways of thinking about value in this class, different ways of attaching a number to companies. But ultimately, you're going to see that if you strip away all the differences, at its core, valuation is simple. So we're going to look at valuing companies from the perspective of an investor investing in the company, from the perspective of managers looking at the company, from the perspective of an activist investor who wants to change the company, from the perspective of another company, but we're still looking at the same company. So we're going to talk about different approaches to valuation, kind of generally, but we're also going to talk about different perspectives on value. But at its core, valuation is simple, and it's universal. It's everywhere. You want to really start on your valuation experience? Tomorrow when you read the paper, don't read it as a collection of news stories. Every story is a valuation experiment waiting to happen. Because somewhere embedded in that story is a valuation question. It might not be up front and center. Like yesterday's valuation question was, at the end of the day, what did you hear? Market's down. Why? China. That always works. Whenever you don't know the answer, throw China on there. Okay? It's enough of a mess. People don't understand enough. Oh, that explains the whole thing. But if you're looking at it from a valuation perspective, you've got to dig deeper. What does that mean? How does China show up in my value? What does it affect? Is it earnings? Is it cash flows? Where does it show up? Is it higher risk? That's a valuation question. Everything has a valuation component to it, and you can start seeing those components. We'll start by valuing public companies. Why? Because the information is right there. It's easy to do, but we're not going to stop there. We're going to value private businesses, not just the Ubers and the Airbnbs of the world, but that hot dog stand outside. If I ask you, what's the value of that hot dog stand, you should be, by the time you get through this class, be able to attach a number to pretty much any asset I come up with. Any asset. If I ask you, is Bitcoin fairly priced? You should be able to answer the question. You should have the tools. And my family gets on me about the fact that I never say these three words, I don't know. It pisses them off. Because they were in Disneyland, they said, which line should we join? Without even pausing for a moment, I said, that line. I said, why don't you say, I don't know? Because if I said, I don't know, I couldn't teach this class, because the reality is, It's true you don't know the answers to most things, but you can still try to figure out a way to come up with an answer. It might not be the right answer, but the process of coming up with an answer is what this class is going to be focused on. Third, let's talk about value and price. And this is something I'm going to come back to over and over again in this class. There are two processes out there. There's the value process. Value process drives what the value of a business is. It's driven by the cash flows, the growth, the risk, whatever you get by buying that business. That's valuation. And usually when we talk about valuation, that's what we're talking about that process of coming up with value. And there's the pricing process. What sets prices? Demand and supply. Let's not make this more complex than it has to be. What drives demand and supply? God only knows. It could be mood. It could be momentum. It could be all kinds of stuff, behavioral stuff, right? In fact, behavioral finance is all about how demand and supply can be based on completely irrational things. So price is set by demand and supply. And if you believed in efficient markets, things nicely gel, right? If you believe in efficient markets, what are you telling me? That the two processes generate numbers that are roughly the same. That value is equal to price. It's actually the most comfortable place to be if you don't like loose ends in your mind. Because you have a value process, a price process, the two are equal, let's move on. And you already know that, I mean, by teaching this class, what am I telling you about efficient markets? About my belief in efficient markets? If I believed in efficient markets, you know how long this class would last? 2 minutes, maybe a minute. You want a number for IBM? Open the paper. Check out IBM closing price. You're done, right? You believe in efficient markets, the market price. So the very fact that you're sitting in this class, you're thinking about investing, suggests that at least in your mind you think that value and price can be different and that you can make money off that difference. So we're going to wrestle with this question. When somebody comes up with a number for a company, when a banker prices an IPO, is he pricing the company? Is he valuing the company? And it might seem like we're dancing on the edge of a process here, but it's in fact fundamental to understanding why we often get very different numbers and numbers that we can't explain. So we're going to talk about that difference as we go through. The fourth is, and this is the question I asked you at the start, is are you a story person or a numbers person? If you're still struggling with that question, let me give you a simple way to answer it. Remember high school first literature class read Moby Dick? Everybody reads Moby Dick, right? And you thought, so you come out of that class and you thought it was a story about a whale and Captain Ahab. And then in the class, the teacher starts telling all the hidden stuff behind the story. And your reaction was, that's a load of bullshit. And you come out of the class and say, never again will I take a class like that. And then you know the rest of your life is set for you, right? You go algebra 1, algebra 2, algebra 3, algebra to the nth power. You hit the college running. You have to take that core class, which is really a way of keeping literature departments and universities employed. Because without that class, you could. How do you keep all those professors going? But you go through that class, you view it as torture. All those books that are supposed to be read. Who comes up with this list, you say? And then you get done with it and say, thank God, I've gone through this trying passage. Now I can get back on my path. If that is a description of what you went through, you're a numbers person. Because then your path is set, right? You pick numbers classes. You went the numbers route. You became an accountant, an actuary, an engineer, a mathematician, a scientist. You're a numbers person. And you have a little contempt for those story people. You will listen to them at a cocktail party, but only if you're drunk. And even then, you're not quite sure they make sense. So you're the numbers person. Let's go the other path. You come out of that Moby Dick class, and you said, that was the greatest experience of my life. I never saw those hidden meanings. I have to go look for more meaning. My son's just finishing. His school doesn't start until next week. And he's reading Emma by Jane Austen. And he hates it with a passion. I don't think he's ever hated something as much as he hates Jane Austen right now. And I look at him and say, you're a numbers person waiting to happen. But for some of you, that was a great experience. He said, I love that. I love the fuzziness of this. And then you went fuzzier and fuzzier and fuzzier. You went to college and you went the fuzzy route. And you're a great storyteller. You can tell stories about things where there aren't even stories to tell. Then you go to work as a story person. You discover one small problem with this world. Story people don't get paid much, right? I mean, it's a reality of life. It's not fair. You're a great journalist. You're not making as much money as an average banker or a below average banker or a below below average banker. Okay? So after about 3 years of being tortured economically for being a story person, some of you are back in school. So there are, the selection bias of this class is pretty set, right? There are about two-thirds of this class, and I want to ask you for a show of hands, just in case you don't want to reveal yourself to your peer group as a story person or a numbers person. But generally speaking, the nature of this class is two-thirds of the people in this class are going to be numbers people, and about a third are story people. And the numbers people think that they have the trump card. They get numbers. This class is going to be easy. And you're right, it's going to be easy from a numbers perspective. But you know what I'm going to have to try to do? I have to get you out of your comfort zone. Your comfort zone is you want to work with numbers. You think this class is going to be about Excel spreadsheets. You will never see an Excel spreadsheet in this class because, one, I hate Excel, and two, if I do an Excel spreadsheet, it's a modeling class. And if you want a modeling class, take an Excel book and go through it, right? I want to get you out of your comfort zone and get you back to the days before Moby Dick. And think about, hey, think about stories. You don't have to be that allergic to storytelling. So I've got to coax you out of your comfort zone and get you to tell stories. And for the story people, I have a different objective. I've got to get you out of your comfort zone where you want to keep telling me stories and more stories and still more stories. And that's nice, but let's start attaching some numbers to stories. My end game for this class is I want, and I tell this to almost pretty much everyone in my evaluation class, and I'll... So I don't know whether I'll accomplish this. I want number crunchers with imagination and storytellers with discipline. So what you get out of this class will depend on what you think you're weakest on. So get out of your comfort zones and get into that half. I mean, left brain, right brain, I mean, we're using one half of our brains. Don't you think it's going to be better to use a whole brain rather than one half of the brain? So that's part of what you have to think about this class is how do you, because valuation is a bridge between stories and numbers. A good valuation should tell a story. Every number should have a story behind it. And every story has a number attached to it. And finally, I don't do this class as an intellectual exercise. Frankly, I don't lie awake and say, I wonder what Twitter is worth right now. That'd be very sick. If that's what you're doing at night, is lying awake wondering what Twitter is worth, see a psychologist, see a psychiatrist, see whatever, get some medication. I have zero intellectual curiosity about what the value of a company is and why it's priced. I do valuation for one reason and one reason alone. I want to act on my valuations. So as we go through this class, the next 15 weeks, I haven't picked the remaining 14 companies I'm going to value. I'm going to value companies. And at the end of every valuation, I'm going to say, this is what I plan to do based on this valuation. I'm not Jim Cramer. I'm not trying to get you to buy what I'm buying. I don't care. But in a sense, to me, valuation without action is kind of empty. And if you're sitting in this class hoping to get a lot of theory, switch. Take a different class. This is not the theory and valuation is this thing. I mean, it's one equation. This is a pragmatic class. If you're a purist, you're going to hate this class. Because I will take every shortcut I can take, every road I can take, because at the end of the process, I want a value. I don't want to get stuck in this process, and I need to do whatever I need to do to get from where I am to that value. So it's a pragmatic class that's about action. And that's what I want you to walk out of this class with, is to be able to act on your valuations. If all you can do is just value companies, but you cannot act on them, I haven't done my job. Because it really is not that kind of class. So here's what the course essentially is going to be about. It's the structure of the class. Basically, we're going to start out with the big picture. Today, this session and the next one, we're going to lay out the big picture evaluation, what the different approaches are, why they do what they do, philosophically, what the end game with each approach is. Then we're going to spend about 10 sessions, I wouldn't say reviewing corporate finance, but revisiting corporate finance. Risk-free rates, discount rates, cash flows, growth rates. For some of you, it might be very simple because you remember all the stuff, but I'm a realist. I know that one summer is enough for you to forget pretty much everything. So when I say free cash flow at equity, you're saying, what the heck are you talking about? And you were in my corporate finance class. I'm not going to beat you up for it. Maybe I should. But we will visit the input process. And I'll make a promise up front that you might not like. I will not value a single company through those sessions. I'll be looking at pieces of companies because it's important that we get those pieces nailed down. Discount rates, cash flows, growth rates. So we're going to spend about 10 sessions just going through those numbers, those little details. And you're going to get bored. You're going to say, when are we going to value a company? And then about two sessions, I'm going to hit you with valuation. We're probably going to value 40 companies in two sessions. So that's a lot of valuations. If you've laid the groundwork, the rest kind of follows out of the process. So we're going to value companies ranging the spectrum from sessions, you know, starting in the end of session 12, going through session 15. Then we're going to spend some time on pricing. Okay? As I said, pricing is about attaching a number to a company, and we're going to talk about the difference between valuation and pricing as we go through the class, but how do you price something? We know how the realtor prices a house, right? What does he or she do? How do realtors attach numbers to houses? They look at other houses that have sold in the neighborhood in the last 3 months. They adjust for the fact that you have an extra bedroom, a bigger lot, and they come up with a number. You know what? I like realtors. At least they're honest about the process that they use to come up with numbers. In fact, if you go to Zillow, they give a Z estimate. Have you ever seen this for any house? So you can pick your house and say, the Z estimate, it's like magic. You say, how the hell do you know the price of my house? You know what they do is they take the transactions, they fed them into a computer, they look at your neighborhood, they look at the size of your house, and they do a pretty good job. That's pricing. You think that's real estate. You can't do that with stocks. Really? What does an equity research analyst do? Takes a multiple, P, EV to EBITDA. He picks 15 companies that he claims are just like your company. And he says, your stock is cheap because it trades at 8 times earnings. These other companies that are just like yours trade at 12 times earnings, buy the stock. Who do you think is on more solid ground? The realtor when he or she said there are 6 houses like yours that have sold in the neighborhood, or the equity research analyst tracking Microsoft who claims to have found 15 companies just like Microsoft? What universe is that on? And then here's, I think, the coup de grace. The equity research analyst does this and then claims to have valued the company, puts a DCF model. Look, there's a DCF model. DCF is the most, those are the three letters that come after each other that scare the heck out of me because people use it to kind of cover up all kinds of stuff. So we're going to talk about pricing, about using multiples and comparables, and go through the process arguing not that this is a bad process, but that we can do it better, that there is data there that we're throwing out right now. So we're going to spend about 4 sessions on pricing. Then I'm going to spend a session, it's kind of a tangent, on what I call asset-based valuation. What is that? If I give you a company which owns 5 real estate properties, you can value it as a company, you can value each property separately and add them all up, right? It's called sum of the parts valuation. It sounds fancy, but you're going to see that it's an application of either valuation or pricing to breaking up pieces of a company. We're going to look at accounting valuations. So asset-based valuation essentially is going to be looking at valuations by breaking a company into its pieces. You see, only one session, there's not much there. Because once you've laid out the foundations for intrinsic valuation, which is what DCF is, and pricing, you can pretty much do anything you want in terms of sum of the parts. And then we're going to spend a couple of sessions on perhaps what's the only thing in valuation that's new and different. This would be the only topic you wouldn't have seen 40 years ago if I'd taught this class, which is applying option pricing not to value options. That's pretty much set. You know, people have been doing that for a while. But to value companies. young biotech companies, natural resource companies. We'll see what the optionality there is, but applying real options. And we're going to close off with a couple of application sessions. The first is inviting acquisitions. I've never understood how you fill an M&A class. What do you have to do? 26 sessions? I hope it's a half semester class. If you ask me to teach a class, after one session, I've run out of material. Because acquisition valuation is not that different from valuing any other company. There are a couple of special issues that come up. One is synergy and the other is control. We're going to talk about valuing those. But again, it's not going to be difficult to do. And we're going to close this class up by looking at bringing corporate finance back. When I started the corporate finance class, I promised you that valuation was the other end of the spectrum, that if you came back, you're going to see a lot of valuation. Now I'm going to put you back in a circle and say, at the end of the valuation class, we're going to go back to basic corporate finance. We're going to tie value to corporate finance decisions, investment decisions, financing decisions, dividend decisions. And the last session is going to be about you. And you'll see in a minute what I mean by that. It's going to be about your valuations of your companies and how they look this semester. Now, I sent you, how many of you did not get any of my emails? I think the law school, and if you're from the law school, I think you have a Stern email address, so stuff is going there. Don't ask me why they don't let you know that you have a Stern email address, but do find out what that Stern email address is, because register for Capital IQ or any of the other data, you have to use the Stern email address. But I sent you this primer. If you know, there's not that much I need from you as prereqs for this class. I need you to understand basic accounting. Basic, very basic. If you still are wrestling with the difference between operating income and net income, you have to get over that problem. So very basically, can you read a financial statement? Can you use basic statistics? Can you make sense? If I gave you 30 data points, can you make sense? Not just in terms of computing an average and a standard deviation, but in terms of some very basic distributions. And there are some financial tools I'll draw on that I will not have a chance to go through, like present value. By now, if you haven't figured out the present value tool on your calculator or on your laptop, you need to get that behind you, because present value is one of those fundamental tools. Now, basic corporate finance is useful. It's not a prerequisite. Those of you who are taking corporate finance with this class simultaneously, it's not a big deal. You'll be able to do both. But basic corporate finance, investment decision, financing, dividend decision. And again, I'll do enough of a review that if you haven't done a full corporate finance class, you should be able to keep along. Okay? As I said, I will torture you for the rest of the semester. So I'll set up the torture so you know exactly what torture is coming each day. Of course, every Monday, there'll be a class. Unless, of course, it's Labor Day or, you know, September 23rd or whatever it is. There'll be a class, and right after the class, I will send you a summary of what the class covered. And we were just in the class. It's amazing, again, how quickly people forget. Yeah. Tuesday, I'll put up my valuation of the week, and I already talked about that. I'll value a company. I'll put it up with the Google Shared spreadsheet so you can start to put your numbers in. Wednesday, I will send out a weekly challenge. You say, what the heck is a weekly challenge? I didn't sign up for this. You didn't sign up for a lot of stuff, but this is part of the parcel. Weekly challenge, what I do is I take the material we did that week and I create a question or a problem around the material, but making you reach. In other words, it's not just about applying things. That you have practice problems to do. But essentially, it's a test of, can you take what we did this week and take it to the next step? Can you apply it? So each week, I'll put up a weekly challenge. On Wednesday, I will send it out. And I will post the solution for it on Sunday. And you have Wednesday through Sunday to submit it. That's the only part of this class where I use NYU classes, because there you can submit it directly into NYU classes. So I'll send you the details on it once the first weekly challenge is up. You're saying, what part of my grade rests on this? Here's the good news. It's zero. So why should you do it? Because you want to understand valuation. You're saying, what if I don't care? I don't care either. Okay? So at that stage, so in a sense, my job is to give you chances to understand valuation. This, to me, I think is good for you. to understand valuation. Okay? But you have only my word for it, and after the first 2 weekly challenges, you might decide, hey, this is a waste of time. In which case, skip the rest. I think there are 12 weekly challenges. I think there are some weeks. I skip Thanksgiving week, for instance, because I wanted to give you a break. Now, on Thursday, I'll send you a reminder where you should be on the project. You're saying, what project? It's coming. Okay. This is really my guilt email, because I know here's what's going to happen. You're going to keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off till the 14th week. So every week I'm going to send you a project email and say, this is where you're supposed to be in the project. And for some of you, if your type A personalities were a little anxiety driven, this might be, oh my God, I'm 3 weeks behind. And maybe that'll make you act. It never works, but I keep doing it anyway. So you get an up and say, this is where you should be in the project. Every Friday I'll put up 10 to 15 minute webcast. I'm saying, I've watched you already twice a week. I know. This webcast is going to be about very pragmatic stuff, like how do you read a 10K? How do you capitalize leases? So basically, I'll take a company and I'll take you through the process. This is where I went on the 10K. This is where I looked up the numbers. So those of you in my corporate finance class, remember these webcasts. Some of them are useful, some of them are not. No. So I'll put up that webcast essentially so you can try that out. On Saturday, I'll send you a weekly newsletter. Lots of news in there. Not. Basically, this is what we did this week. This is what we plan to do next week. This is where we're going. So think of it like a GPS. That's basically what it is. It's here's where we are, here's the destination, here's how we're moving. Again, not a lot of news, but again, take a couple of minutes and just look at it. On Sundays, I said I'll post up the weekly challenge and tell you what's coming up in the following week. It pretty much takes care of every day of the week. Now, for each class, please do try to get here on time, but I'm not Bill Silber. I don't have the kind of personality to enforce that just by glaring at you. Okay? I mean, come on. Bill looks at you, you freak out, right? Okay? Or Roy Smith comes and looks down at you like this. You know, I can't pull that off. So I'd rather have you here late than never. So if you're getting pizza and you got delayed, you got a cappuccino, you spilled it on yourself, you just slept until 10:40, you want to come in at 11. I'd rather have you here than not here. Bring your lecture note packet. That's the only thing you have to bring with you, is bring your lecture notes. Okay? You can either buy it at the bookstore, you can print it off. If you want to buy it at the bookstore, good luck to you. You have a lot of money, obviously, to throw away. Just go ahead. But it comes in a nice bound packet. It's a cover and a back. It's, you know, so if you like that, and you're willing to pay $23 or whatever they charge you. But just remember, there are three packets. It's about 800 pages of lecture notes. But I will put the PDF version on, and just that's the only thing you have to bring in. If you do miss a class, there is no excuse for saying I missed a class, because you can catch up. I'll put up about, by the end of the day, it's taken them a little longer than with the new system that they've set up for the webcast than it used to. But by the end of each lecture day, Monday and Wednesday, I will put up the streaming webcast for the class, the media side. But I also create downloadable video and audio files, and I'll create a YouTube version of the class. I know it's overkill, but I just like doing it. The video stuff I do because you're not always in a broadband connection. So if you have a long flight, this will keep you occupied. Or at least put you to sleep. Whatever it is you want to do, you know, either way it works. So you can download it, watch it at your own convenience, torture your spouse, your significant other by making them watch valuation when they want to watch a movie, you know, whatever it is. The YouTube I do because actually I've discovered it. I added that last year because one of the great things about YouTube, it adjusts the size of the stream to whatever your broadband connection looks like. Okay? And as you saw in that email I sent you, there will probably be about 20,000 people taking this class with you. And that's something to remember because you're saying, well, what if all this is going to be online? Why the heck should I show up in class? You paid concert price tickets. I mean, what do you pay for each class? $200 per class? Might as well show up. Otherwise, you're getting what everybody's getting for free. Okay? So I'd rather have you here. I like teaching to a live audience as opposed to, I guess, a dead audience or non-live audience now. So if you're here, it makes my job easier. But let's face it, if none of you show up, I'll still show up and do the class. It's creepy to be sitting in a room this big with nobody in there. But you know, if you can make it, do make it. If you cannot make it, use those as crutches. I like writing. I have 4 books on valuation. You don't need any of them. My publisher will hate me for saying this. You can live without any of these books. So if you haven't spent the money yet, don't. Right? Because try it out for a couple of weeks. Maybe you'll be fine, maybe you will not. It is nice to have a book because you see things in a different format, structured differently. And if you have to buy a book, the investment valuation book is really the only textbook of the 4. Textbook in what sense? It comes with problems and the stuff that textbooks come with. The others are actually practitioner books. And if you really are budget constrained, the little book of valuation, it's really little. So it's called the little book of valuation. I remember the publisher saying, would you write a little book? I said, can I write a little book and make it really big? And I said, it has to be little. So it's really 200 pages. So it's kind of a compressed version. It's only $10 or $12. So if you really want to just show people you have a book, maybe that's a book to buy. And if you have an iPad or an iPhone, you can download the valuation app that I wrote with my friend Anand Sundaram at Dartmouth. Basically, it's an intrinsic valuation app. It's pretty versatile. You can value a company with it. You say, what if I have an Android? You made the wrong choice. Actually, I'd love to write an Android version, but so you go to the iTunes store, you type in new value, download the app. It comes with a money-back guarantee. You know why? Because it's free. So you don't like it? Tough. I don't care, right? So in a sense, so it's a free app. So, you know. And it turns out that writing an app for an operating system means you have to go back to scratch. So the Android app we're not writing simply because it'll mean going through the process of starting from scratch and writing the entire thing. And with our budget constraint, we said, you know what, one app is enough. If you have a BlackBerry, you have a dead technology walking, right? You got to deal with that somewhere along the way, but that's your between you and BlackBerry, not between, so don't bring me into the process. Okay? So much of the stuff for this class will be on the web page for this class, which is theequity.h, so you'll see the practice. So everything that is related to the class will be there, including all the emails that I sent out. They will be put up there in chronological order. I will try things out. This semester I'm thinking of trying out TED-Ed, which is an extension of TED Talks where you can take webcasts and you can actually create questions around the webcast, and essentially as you answer the questions, if you don't get a question, it takes you back to the point in the webcast. So I'll keep you posted on whether I'm planning to try something. And if you want to try it, you're welcome to. If you don't want to try it, that's fine. The class will be carried on Apple iTunes U so each class, as I put it on, in addition to seeing it on the website for the class, you'll also see it on iTunes U. And with an Android, you can still use iTunes U, even though it's an Apple app. And there will be a YouTube playlist for just this class, so you'll just see the videos for this class. And there's more. The Google Calendar for the class has been there for a few weeks. You can check out when things are. You should have no surprises coming to the class. Everything is laid out. Because we have the strange semester where you lose 3 days in the middle, I think the final exam is December 18th. I will be giving an early final on December 16th. I don't know the time of that early final, so those of you I already had a few people emailing me saying, I have to get out of here by December 17th. I have somebody getting married on December 18th. I would recommend waiting till December 18th to take your final if you have a choice, but if you really have to get out, there will be an early final on December 16th. I will, whenever I post things, as you probably already noticed with my 3 emails that you got, is when I post something on my blog, it's almost always about valuation. So I will send you that link. And, you know, my Twitter feed is working. I wanted to be Lady Gaga. I have changed my objective now. I want to beat this Kanye West guy. He doesn't deserve any of the followers he has. So I'm offering a 10-for-1 deal, which is if you can get 10 followers over for you, I'll pay you $1. So it has to be 10 Kanye West followers. You've got to make them stop following Kanye West and start following me. So if you can do that, you know, and you can show me some evidence, I'll pay you $1 for every 10. Right? But if you don't have Twitter, not a big deal. And if you still have lots of time on your hands, I don't see how you could, then that Of course, there's this unpleasant thing, which is this class is not one of those pass, no pass classes for credit, no credit. I have to give you a grade. It's the part of the class I don't enjoy that much because that's not, and it's part of the class you probably least enjoy as well, but it's a reality. So I have to figure out a way to grade you, and here's what I'm looking for. If you can pretty much value anything I ask you to value, then you deserve an A. So that's what I'm testing. Can you value pretty much anything? So I'm looking to see how I can get there. If you can value most things, then you're in the BB plus. If you can value some things, then you're in the C status. If you can value nothing at the end of this class, then I don't think you deserve an A, B, or a C. I don't think anybody's going to fall into the value nothing category unless you really, really, really try. And I'm not putting it past some of you to keep trying, but I don't think anybody here is going to be in that no hope status. So my job is to try to get all of you to value just about anything. But you might fall short. That doesn't mean you fail, because this is a process you can keep working on. So everything we do in this class is going to be structured towards my being able to get a sense of where you are on that. Now, in terms of the work for this class, there's going to be a group project, and I'll talk about that in a second. There's going to be individual work, which is going to be about 50% of the class, but let me again be honest about that. On the group part of the class, the 50%, there will be, the variance will be relatively small because you don't really have truly abysmal groups. So a really low group score might be 42 or a 40 out of 50. A really good group score might be 50 out of 50. So what I'm trying to say is the 50% on the individual work sounds like only half the class, but it's really a lot more than that in determining your grade. So the three quizzes, the dates of the quizzes are right there. They will pretty much be quizzes that cover the previous 8 sessions. So they're in a sense non-cumulative, but that's a lie. Because if you really don't get discount rate stuff, you're not going to be able to do pricing either. So you do need to understand the material as you go along. So there are 3 quizzes, and the final exam is scheduled for December 18th from 1 to 3 p.m. They're all open book, open notes, so you can do it. So I'm not testing you on equations and formula. Do you have to know them? Okay. But this is about you being able to apply those concepts that we learn in class to actual problems. Incidentally, every quiz and exam I've ever given in this class, which is actually a lot more than I gave in my corporate finance class, because I teach this class usually twice every year, is on my website. So before quiz one, you can actually try out my last 50 quizzes. That takes a lot of time. So if you are a little queasy about this class, don't throw up right now. If you're really worried, maybe I might not be able to pull this off, my suggestion is start preparing for the quizzes early. Start preparing as we go through. Work through as many, because you have 50 quizzes you can work through, right? So you have a lot of practice material on stuff that other people have had to deal with on quizzes. So there are lots of examples from prior quizzes you can work through. Am I promising you that quiz one this year will look just like the quizzes in the previous year? They'll look like it, but it won't. I mean, that's stupid. Right? I'm not going to put the same quiz up. It's open book, open notes. If you're just going to copy from a previous quiz. So that my job is to come up with a twist you haven't seen before. And that's getting more and more difficult, because after 30 years of quizzes, you know, pretty much everything I've had to throw at you, I've already thrown. So it actually means that you should have an easy time. Never works out that way, but at least you hold on to that hope, right? Now, I'll leave you to browse through this page, because there are a lot of little rules about quizzes that you probably remember from my corporate finance class, which is the quizzes are on the specific dates. I can't give you a quiz on a different date. So please don't come and say, can I take it the next day? Can I take it the previous day? If I start opening this process up, it's going to be a nightmare. With 300 people in the class, it's impossible to do. If you have to miss a quiz, that's okay. The 10% on that quiz will get moved to whatever's left in the class, never back. So there's no strategic quiz missing that's going to work for you, because if you do really well in the first 2 quizzes, not taking the 3rd quiz will not make the first 2 quizzes weighted more. It'll make your final exam. So it's always going to be moved forward. So you can never make yourself better off by taking all the quizzes than by missing. So it's always good for you to take all the quizzes. So if you get to quiz 3 and say, look, I did really well in the first 2 quizzes, don't blow off the 3rd quiz. Take it if you're still around. Right? If you miss a quiz, as I said, that quiz score gets moved to the right. So you're saying, what's the payoff to doing all three quizzes? If you take all three quizzes, then I'll take your worst quiz and give it the average score that you got on your remaining exams. So as an example, let's say you're one of those people who got 10 in the first quiz, 10 in the second quiz, 0 on the third quiz. I don't know what happened to you in the third quiz. You just fell asleep. And then you got a 30 out of 30 on the final quiz, on the final exam. So you have 10, 10, 0, 30, right? You know what I'll do to your 0? I'll make it a 10. That's the average score, 100% on the... So basically what I do is I take out your worst quiz, and if it sounds too complicated, I'll send you an Excel spreadsheet that will... No, seriously, I'll send you, look up your grade spreadsheet that some of you remember from corporate finance, where you can see what happens. At this point in time, there's all nothing there, so maybe I'll wait till the second quiz to send it to you so you can play around with it, see what you need to do to get your score up. I will grade all your quizzes, so don't pick on Nick. He's not grading the quizzes, so I will grade all your quizzes. I screw up all the time. So if you think there's a mistake in your grading, bring it in to me. You can bring in your, as I said, books, lecture notes, no laptops. Okay. I used to say no devices either, but I've discovered there are at least some people who have their lecture notes on their iPads, because you can download the PDF file and see. If you have your lecture notes on your iPad, that's fine, but don't open up Excel on the iPad. So basically, there's no connectivity during the exam. If you use iPads, it's purely to look up lecture notes, no laptops. And thank God for that, because if this were a quiz where I let you use laptops, I'd write a very different set of problems, and you don't want to see those anyway. So those are the rules for the quizzes. No, not very many, but keep track of them. Any questions? So let me talk a little bit about the project. I'm not going to say much because at the moment you're going to say, hey, what's this about? What I want you to do, start thinking about right now already, is a company you'd like to value. Process can, it might have started already, pick a company. Because this project just started, right now. Okay? You're going to pick a company, and that's going to be your lab experiment for the next 15 weeks. You're going to do everything we do on this class, we're going to do in the company. Okay? So it is a group project, the group gets one grade. Unlike the corporate finance class, the companies picked within a group don't have to have a theme. In corporate finance, I made you pick a theme, right? Transportation, leisure. You can pick whatever companies you want with one constraint. At least one of your companies has to be a money-losing company. At least one. At least one of your companies has to have high growth potential, revenue growth of more than 25%. So I'm going to be pretty loose about that definition. At least one high growth company. At least one non-US company in the local exchange. No cheating and doing an ADR and working only with dollars because that's what you feel comfortable with. And at least one service company. And my definition of service is 80% of the world is service companies. You'll have no trouble. So if you're a group of five, you can pick five companies, any companies you want, as long as they meet these criteria. Now, I'll give you one very low-cost way in which you can meet all the criteria. Create a group of four. And then invite a fifth person. You know when the desperate people in week two doesn't have a group? When they come in, tell them that they have to value the money-losing foreign service high-growth company. Hey, I'll find you companies. I have a list of those if you want. Flipkart. No, you can value Flipkart. That's right. Go ahead and do it. Hey. No, seriously, if you want to understand valuation, don't value Coca-Cola. No, actually, let me not name names. Coca-Cola might be interesting to you. If you want to value Coca-Cola, do it. But don't do it because it's an easy company to value. The more troublesome the company you pick to value, the more you will learn out of the process. So the first step is once you've created the group, pick a company. And the other difference between this group project and the corporate finance group project, the corporate finance group project actually required more interaction. Each section, I know you didn't interact that much as I wanted, but it required... This project I've designed that you don't really need to talk to each other much for the next 15 weeks. And that's an acceptance of reality, which is by the time you get to the second year as MBAs, you don't want to really see other MBAs. You're tired of your block. You say, what block? I don't even remember that block. So basically, this recognizes that that allergy you get, which is a second year MBA, is, I don't want to deal with these people all the time. That's fine. This group project is primarily an individual project. The only group part of it is to meet those constraints. And there's going to be a second project where you have to work as a group, but only for 1 week. That you can live with, right? So that's the first step. You're going to do an intrinsic valuation of this company. In other words, you know, and we'll talk about intrinsic valuation in the class. You're going to do an intrinsic valuation. And you're going to turn in that intrinsic valuation. It's probably going to be an Excel spreadsheet with a DCF halfway through the semester. And before you freak out, here's why I do it. This is not as bad in the fall, but in the spring, you have this problem called premature graduation. You know what that is? Around February, you think you've already graduated. People stop thinking about what they have to do. So this is my prescription for premature graduation, which is I try to get you to do stuff early enough and put this product, hey, turn in your DC evaluation. What I will do with your DC evaluation, I won't grade it. I will give you feedback basically on what I think about the valuation, numbers you might want to change. I won't force you to change anything. So it's really about feedback. Okay? You're saying, what will happen if I don't turn it in? Nothing. But then in your final valuation, if you turn in a really screwed up valuation, don't blame me. So think of this as a midway process where you can turn it. And it's good for you because in a sense it gets that discounted cash flow valuation out. Then I'm going to ask you to price your company. You say, what's the difference? I just valued the company. It's going to be a different process. You're going to price your company based on how other companies just like yours. You're going to play realtor for a moment. You're going to price the company. You're going to pick a multiple. You're going to pick comparables. You're going to come up with the pricing for your company. And I'm going to ask you to price your company both against other companies that you call comparable companies and against the rest of the market. And I'll let you decide whether you want the market to be the global market, the U.S. market, the local. Or the. So basically, I'm going to let you price it against. You say, why would that be different from step three? In step three, so as an example, if you're pricing Facebook against comparables, you're going to price Facebook against other social media companies. Here, you're pricing Facebook against the rest of the S&P 500. And guess what? You can get two very different answers depending on who you price yourself against. Step five, and this will be towards the end of the class, if it applies, and it'll apply to only about one out of five companies, I'm going to ask you to try to apply option pricing models to your company. Again, it sounds complex, but trust me, it's a 15-minute add-on to your valuation. So by the time you get to step five, you're potentially going to have four different numbers for your company. An intrinsic value number, a pricing against the comparables, a pricing against the market, and an option pricing price. You think, so what? Step six, I'm going to ask you, are you buying or are you selling? No weaselly words. No strong buy, semi-strong buy, weak buy. You either buy or you sell. Once in a while, I'll let you chicken out and say, I'll hold. I don't even know what that means because you have nothing to hold. But basically, I can't make up my mind. So every semester, my objective is to drive the holds down to zero. It never works. About 15% of the class is incapable, at least by the end of 15 weeks, to being forced to buy or sell. But you see why this is going to be an issue, because you're going to have four different numbers for your company, and you're going to have one price. You're saying, what if two of the numbers are lower and two of the numbers are higher? You get to pick. You get to pick which ones you're going to base your decision on. And there is no right answer. There's no one that I want you to pick. It's whatever you feel comfortable. In other words, you will get to decide whether you want to go with the value that you came up with or the price that you came up with. So that's where the final project will lead. It's due on the very last day of class. Remember I said the last class is about you? In the weekend before the last class, I'm going to ask you for your numbers. So what did you get as your intrinsic value? What do you get as a price? And then in the last class, I'm going to show you what 300 companies look like this semester. How many of you found your companies to be undervalued? How many overvalued? And I'm going to give you the history of what this class has found relative to what the market's done over the last 30 years. So you can see how this class has played out. Now, the second project is a mystery project. What is it about? If I told you, it wouldn't be a mystery. So leave that to me. Somewhere in the 7th or the 8th week, I'm going to give you this project. It'll be something that is in the news, something. So I might take 3,300 publicly traded Chinese companies. Actually, that's not a bad idea. So tell me which five Chinese companies you would buy today. And I'll give you the tools. Trust me, you will be able to do this. That'll be a much shorter project. That's also a group project. But that project will be worth 10%, and it's a 2-week short-term project in the middle of the class. Okay. So now that I've scared you enough, let's start on valuation. As I said, this is the big picture. This is the start of the big picture. Let me lay out the class. When I first started teaching valuation, this is the valuation intro packet. When I first started teaching valuation, I made the assumption that everybody else was as interested in valuation as I was. Horrible mistake, because I've discovered in hindsight that most people don't believe in value. You're saying, but they do it all the time. They do it because it's their job. They do it to cover their rear ends. But if you caught them in an honest moment and asked them, why is Facebook trading at $84 per share? Their answer is going to be because that's what the market thinks it's worth. Most people think valuation is a wasteful exercise, that it really accomplishes nothing. If I believe that, I wouldn't be teaching the class. I'd like to start off by telling you why I do valuation. I do valuation to fight the lemming in me. You heard the story of lemmings? 1950s, National Geographic went to this island. They filmed the most amazing sight. Thousands of big, ugly, rat-like creatures, that's what lemmings look like, don't glamorize them, gathered together on a cliff, ran right off the cliff into an ocean and committed collective suicide. And ever since, one of those big questions has been, why do they do it? What drives them off the cliff? I don't know the answer to that question, but let's do some virtual imagery. Put yourself, think about the first lemming in the group. Right? He's going too fast, he couldn't stop, off the cliff, into the ocean. Incidentally, these guys can't swim. It kind of seals the deal, dead. Second lemming, too close to the first guy, also in the ocean, dead. But I'd like you to put yourself in the shoes of the very last lemming in that group. I know lemmings don't wear shoes, but kind of hang in there with the analogy anyway. Can you see yourself? Beautiful Pacific Island. You're running as fast as you can towards a cliff. You've seen your entire tribe disappear off that cliff. I would think you have second thoughts about what you were just planning to do. Your left brain, right brain, whatever part of you is rational, saying what? Stop, stop, stop. Don't do this. Then you hear the other part of your brain pipe up. It says, you know what it's saying? They must know something that you don't. 7 most deadly words in investing. They must know something that you don't. You know when you hear, let's say you sit down to value a company. Give the company name, Tesla. Are there any Tesla fanatics here? Don't freak out. I'm not going to say anything terrible about Elon Musk or Tesla yet. I'll reserve it for a different time in a different forum. So you value Tesla. You come up with $120 per share. It's a stock trading at $240, $245. So what's your rational side? Say, don't buy that stock, right? But then you hear the voice in the back of your head. They must know something that you don't. It speaks in a monotone, don't ask me why. And when you hear it, magical things start to happen to your valuation. Your growth rates start to go up. Your cash flows start to get larger. Your discount rate starts to go down. 120 becomes 150, 180, 190. It's almost like the spreadsheet has a mind of its own. And it's moving towards 240. Don't fight it. There's a lemming inside each and every one of you dying to get out. Let it out. In fact, you can divide the whole world of investors into 3 groups of lemmings. The first group I call proud lemmings. I'm a lemming and I'm proud to be a lemming. They call themselves momentum investors. But it's pretty much the same thing, right? What do? They look for a crowd, they join in. You're buying, I'm buying too. You're selling, I'm selling too. Why are you buying? I don't care. I can't even imagine going up to somebody saying, I'm a momentum investor. Might as well say, I'm a lemming and I'm proud to be a lemming. The second group of lemmings are called Yogi Bear lemmings. This is Yogi Bear cartoons. Do you see any of you see the Yogi Bear movie? Perhaps the worst movie ever made. Maybe this Mall Cop 2 is competing with it. Okay? But I actually went to see the movie. My kids refused to go, but I went anyway because I used to love those comic books with Yogi Bear in it. And if you've ever read one of the Yogi Bear comic books, he was smarter than the average bear. That's what let him survive. Yogi Bear lemmings think they're smarter than the average lemming. Here's what they want to do. They want to run with the crowd till the very edge of the cliff and at the last moment veer away. great if you can pull it off, right? You get all the upside of momentum and none of the downside. Admit it, you're tempted. There's a lot of stupid people out there. I have an MBA, almost. I've taken a valuation class, almost. I know where the cliff is coming, almost. I am smarter than the average lemming. In case you're tempted, no one knows where the cliff is. That's why after every correction, what do you hear? I saw it coming. You've been on CNBC every day for the last 4 years. How come you never mentioned it? It just slipped my mind. After every correction, it's obvious that it's coming. But until it happens, you have no idea that it's coming. I can't pull off being a proud lemming. I am not smarter than the average lemming. I have no idea where the cliff is. If you ask me to describe myself, that's me. A lemming with a life vest. That's all I can aspire to be. You know why I'm going to be a lemming? Because I'm human. All human beings, it's built into you, right? I mean, imagine being a caveman. You're walking down, or a cavewoman, if you want to. You're walking down the steppes. You see your entire tribe running towards you. What's the most sensible thing to do? Turn and run with them. You say, I'm a contrarian. You walk in the opposite direction. Guess what's going to happen to you? They're probably running from a mammoth. You're going to get stomped. Most of the time, when you see people panicking, there's a reason behind the panic. It's built into you. That's why you can tell me you're a contrarian, you're irrational, you're sitting there watching the market melt down. Guess what? Those instincts are going to kick in. I know they're going to kick in for me. And to me, valuation is the life vest that I throw myself. Essentially, it says, look, you're going to go with the crowd because that's your instinct, but maybe you can hold on to these cash flows and it'll keep you up even if the rest of the crowd changes its mind. So you asked me to give you another objective of the class. I want to throw you that life vest. Maybe by the end of the class, I can't stop you going with the crowd. Maybe you'll have something else to hold on to besides just the crowd mood and the crowd momentum. So I'm going to start with the misconceptions about valuation. These are widely held, and I'll come back to this for the start of the next class because to me, this is where valuation gets into trouble. First misconception about valuation, and I talk a little bit about this in the context of science. Valuation is an objective search for the truth, that you're some kind of scientist sitting there trying to value things. Dispense with the delusion. All valuations are biased. The company you're going to pick, we already picked, will be picking. I'll tell you, oh, you've already biased your valuation based on who you pick, because you don't pick companies randomly. You pick companies because you like them, you dislike them. You like the management, you dislike the management. All valuations are biased. The only question is, how much is the bias and in which direction? And I'll give you a personal example to bring home how bias can affect valuations. I have valued Microsoft every year since 1986. Since its IPO. Every single time I valued Microsoft, I found it to be overvalued. You name the price, I found it overvalued at that price. $2, $5, $8, $15, don't buy, don't buy, don't buy, don't buy. Strange, right? One of the great success stories of equity markets, at least for the last part of the last century, I wouldn't have touched it one step of the way. Now, I could give you access to every single valuation of Microsoft I've done, and you could be digging through the numbers looking for clues as to why I found it overvalued. Be looking in the wrong place. You really want to figure out why I found Microsoft to be overvalued? All you have to do is take the elevator up to the 9th floor of KMAC. Go to 969, not 996. You know, remember the confusion. Go to 969. First thing you're going to notice is a sticker on my door of an apple. I won't tell you where I got the sticker. You open the door, it's actually open. So don't get there ahead of me and rip me off or take any of my stuff. Okay? You walk in, I'll give you the freedom to walk in. You walk in, you're going to be surrounded by laptops and devices, all of which share one common characteristic. They all have an Apple on their back. I've been an Apple user since 1981. And to me, Microsoft has always been the Darth Vader of technology. For those of you who are Star Wars fans, let me be a little more specific. I'm not talking Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader. I'm talking about Darth Vader, the guy who never takes a shower, wears the black stuff. You know, looks like he's going to a funeral or creating a funeral every single step of the way. I have a lot of bad thoughts about Bill Gates. Anybody who thinks control, option, delete is a good idea. deserves to live in geek hell for the rest of his life, right? I mean, who thinks about it? Control, Alt, Delete. That's so intuitive. First, three keys at one step. What if you're a one-handed person? Have you ever thought about this? And when I say